Sam Sixkiller glanced at the clock on the wall over his desk. It was about time for the tellers to go to work at the bank. He got up, strapped on his handgun, and prepared to take a walk down the length of the street, a routine he had agreed upon with Walter Lassiter. The banks had never been robbed, probably because the Choctaw Light Horse was originally headquartered in Etaka until 3 years ago, when the Union Agency for all the five civilized tribes was moved to Muskogee. Since then, Sam and one policeman, who had just been killed in Broken Bow, were the only Choctaw policemen working out of Etaka, with Sam serving more as a local sheriff for the town. The citizens of that town paid for a modest supplement to his regular salary for that service. Comfortable with the town's low incidence of crime in recent years, he was now concerned with the appearance of the Blanton gang at Durant Station. It had been 3 years since the Blantons had been run out of the nations, most of the credit for that going to Buck Avery. But the loss of Joseph Big Eagle by the hand of Billy Blanton was enough to put all lawmen in the territory on alert. He waved good morning to Henry Jenkins as he walked past the dry goods store, and he continued on along the dusty thoroughfare. Approaching the bank, he noticed that the window shades in the two front windows were still down. It didn't cause him to be overly alarmed. There were no horses tied in front of the building, and it wouldn't be the first time Lassiter had forgotten to raise the shades. Sam smiled in amusement at the thought, for he sometimes suspected that Lassiter left him down on purpose just to test his alarm system.
Good morning, Sam.
Sixkiller heard the greeting as he neared the porch. Turning toward the sound, he saw Ed Tuttle, one of Lassiter's tellers, crossing over from the hotel.
Morning, Mr. Tuttle. Better let me go in first. The shades are down.
Tuttle, as unconcerned as Sam, smiled and stopped to lean against the porch corner post while the lawman entered the bank. The door was unlocked. Again, nothing unusual since it was time for the tellers to arrive. Without concern enough to draw his revolver from the holster, Sam opened the door. At first, there appeared to be no one in the bank. He was about to call out for Lassiter when Roy Blanton popped up from behind the teller's cage and pointed a shotgun at him. The buckshot slammed him in his chest and knocked him out the open door to land on the porch.
Jesus God!
Shocked out of his wits, Ed Tuttle backed off the porch and bumped into another teller just arriving for work.
What?
Help. In the next moment, his astonishment turned to cold terror when the menacing image of Roy Blanton appeared in the doorway. Fright robbed Ed Tuttle of any thought but escape.
No!
He turned and ran.
Oh, Lord!
With blind panic, Jason followed suit and ran around the corner of the building, only to meet Zeke Blanton head-on. The sound of the shotgun blast had brought Zeke running with the horses.
Oh, damn!
Burke took off again. With no idea what the shooting was about, and Jason Burke now sprinting away from him.
You son of a bitch!
Zeke shot him down. Rounding the building then, he saw his father standing over the fallen lawman.
You all right, Paul?
Yeah, I'm just dandy. But this Injun sheriff ain't feeling so good.
He drew his pistol then. Put a bullet in the dying man's brain.
I expect we're about done here. We best get along.
Buster joined his father on the porch.
By God, I reckon that's one less lawman to worry about.
That's a fact.
Roy reached over and jerked Buster's hat from his head and proceeded to whip his son violently about the head and neck with him.
Good God! That's for being so damn dumb!
We ain't got no more dynamite, Pa! You ain't got the brains of a blue jay! I didn't want him to know that!
Roy then turned back to the open doorway.
Junior, You tie the bank feller up?
Yeah, Pa.
We gotta get out of here. Come on.
The four bandits climbed on their horses with guns drawn to discourage any heroic thoughts of the local citizens. A few curious souls had emerged, drawn by the sound of gunfire. But upon seeing the four mounted outlaws, they quickly sought safety behind closed doors. Smugly satisfied, Roy Blanton led his son toward the south end of town. But he pulled up when he espied an obscure shack displaying a simple sign over the door that proclaimed police. On an angry impulse, he emptied his pistol, firing at the shack. Needing no reason to follow suit other than their father's example, his three sons did likewise. When there was no return fire, Roy dismounted kicked the door open. Looking around the empty room, he saw a lantern on the desk. Smashing it on top of the desk, he struck a match and set it ablaze. He stood in the doorway watching the flames gather strength while the boys crowded in behind him. Feeling as if another blow had been struck in retaliation for Billy's execution, he walked out of the shack and faced his three sons.
Let's get the hell out of this damn town.
He stepped up in the saddle and glared back down the street defiantly, daring anyone to challenge. No one dared. Yeah. With no prior planned destination, they headed back to the cross to count their money and celebrate. After 2 days in the saddle, following a trail that led through the San Bois Mountains, Casey and Buck rode through a rugged stretch of sandstone hills and cliffs, some rising as high as 1,500 feet. The sides and top of the hills were heavily forested with pine and oak and dotted with boulders.
I trailed a train robber through this stretch of hills about 5 years ago. I lost him for almost half a day until I found his horse at the bottom of a cliff. It was in a natural corral formed by rocks. Well, I climbed through a bunch of rocks and trees and found him holed up in a cave. I worked my way up to the mouth of that cave, halfway expecting to get a belly full of lead, but nothing happened. I figured he was waiting for me to come in after him. I was a sitting duck, I tell you. I finally said to hell with it, I'm going in. Coming to find out, he had slipped through a hole in the top. I'd been chasing that son of a bitch for 4 days, and he got away while I was sitting there waiting behind a rock. I crawled out too, found myself at the top of the cliff, looked over the edge, and there he was, laying on the rocks below, deader than hell. I don't know if he jumped or fell. The boys over at McAllister told me I had found Robber's Cave. Most of the outlaws in Texas and the nations knew about it, hid out there when they was on the run.
Reckon you could find it again?
Maybe, if I had reason to. But there ain't gonna be nobody we're looking for in there. I wouldn't waste our time looking for it.
Casey couldn't help but wonder how Buck could be so sure. If it was a regular hideout for fugitives, it couldn't hurt to take a look just to be certain.
Come on. I know a good spot to camp if we get a move on.
With only a half hour or so of daylight left, they eventually came upon a small spring.
This suit you?
Suits me. I expect we'll strike McAllister early enough tomorrow to catch the afternoon train to Durant Station.
After taking care of the horses, they gathered wood to build a fire to boil some coffee and roast some of the dried venison Casey had prepared while awaiting Billy Blanton's hanging.
Oh, this eats right good. You've done a good job on it. Somebody taught you how to dry jerky. You ain't been laying up with an Indian woman, have you?
No, I guess I just watched my ma fix it enough when I was a kid.
It's been a while since I've ate any wild meat. Maybe when we get done with this job, I'll do some hunting myself. I'm getting tired of hunting men. Yeah, I wouldn't admit this to John Council, but I'm getting a little long in the tooth for his business.
He went to his saddlebags and fished around in one of the pockets, finally pulling out a scratched-up briar pipe and a pouch of tobacco. While the old deputy sat back down, Casey studied him for a few moments while he loaded the pipe, tamped the load, and lit it up. He wondered if he was looking at himself in about 15 or 20 years. He realized that he had spent no time really thinking about his future and what he would have to fall back on when he reached Buck's age. It was something that normally never occurred to him. But looking at Buck sitting on the other side of the fire with a ring of tobacco smoke floating around his head brought the reality of the inevitable to his thinking. He thought about the money he had earned in the year just past. Living from day to day, he had never kept close count on his earnings. $2 for making an arrest, 6 cents per mile for traveling to the place of arrest, 10 cents per mile for bringing the prisoner back to Fort Smith, 50 cents for every time he served a subpoena. And John Council, as his boss, took 25% off the top before he got paid. When all was said and done, he seriously doubted if he had made much more than $500 for the year. It left nothing to put away for the time when he was too old to do the job. It also wasn't a hell of a lot to offer a wife, if he was so inclined. Telling himself he was straying into dangerous thoughts there, he brought his mind back before he started thinking about Fred McDonald. Dark-haired daughter again.
What the hell are you gonna do if you quit?
Buck thought a moment before replying.
I reckon I've been pinching my pennies to try to save up a little something to fall back on. I got a little cabin over in the Kiamishi don't nobody know about. I reckon I'll just hunt and fish till I turn my toes up.
That was all he was willing to offer. He didn't think it was wise to share the fact that he was a silent partner with Frenchy Petite in the Deuce of Spades. Casey nodded his head thoughtfully. It was a subject he didn't care to dwell on at his young age, so he decided he had spent enough thought on the matter for now.
Well, maybe we'll be shot down by some outlaw before we have to face the problem.
It was early afternoon when the two lawmen rode into the odd collection of structures that made up the settlement of McAllister, close by the tracks of the MKT, or the Katy as it was called locally. They went immediately to the railroad depot to check on the arrival of the afternoon train to Durant.
It won't be for an hour yet. Are you Buck Avery?
I am.
The station master handed him a telegram.
This came in last night.
Buck read it.
Damn. Blanton's robbed the bank in Itaki yesterday. They killed Sam's six killer.
This was sorrowful news to Casey. Sam was a good man, a dedicated lawman. He'd be hard to replace. He looked at Buck, who shook his head sadly, having been a friend of Sam's for many years longer than Casey had.
I guess we'll be getting off the train at Itaki.
Buck nodded his silent agreement. He'd been wrong in insisting that the Blantons would hop back across the river to Texas after hitting Durant. That troubled him because he had been certain he knew Roy Blanton's mind and he could predict what the notorious outlaw would do. His gaze lingered on the young deputy for a moment longer. Confident and fearless Casey was, ready to stand toe-to-toe with the Blantons, even though outnumbered 2-1. Buck remembered that he, too, was that way once. Now, he feared that this next confrontation with his old nemesis might be the most deadly. The train pulled in pretty close to the scheduled time. There was no livestock car attached, but there was a half-empty boxcar with enough space for 3 horses. The conductor was reluctant to permit it. But when Buck insisted it was official business of the Federal Court for the Western District of Arkansas, he conceded. The horses were crowded into the car, and Buck and Casey stayed with him for the 40-mile ride to Itaki.
God damn! You're right when you said you should have been more careful picking a horse.
Buck's remark was inspired by the tear-producing, acrid aroma of freshly laid horse dung courtesy of Casey's gray gelding. Hardly an experienced train traveler, Gray was not comfortable with the strange sensation of the gently rocking boxcar, the result of which caused a rush to the exit in his bowels.
Oh, hell! Damn.
The boxcar was well made to the point where there was a little wind that blew through it. That quality worked just as well to contain odors manufactured from within.
It's best we open the door some. We still have about 35 miles to go. Look. I don't feel like suffocating because of that horse shit.
Good idea.
As soon as they rolled to a stop, Casey and Buck had jumped the horses off the train, anxious to see that no damage had been done to the freight loaded in half the car. The conductor climbed inside.
Oh, great God Almighty!
Well, time to get.
As the two deputies climbed up into their saddles, the conductor stuck his head out of the open door.
Hey, what about this mess you left?
There's an official procedure for that. You can put it in a sack and ship it back to Fort Smith. Or you can keep it in the depot and wait for Fort Smith to send somebody to come get it. Much obliged for the ride.
Walter Lassiter looked out the bank window to see two riders pull up and dismount. Making no move to get up from his desk to greet them, he continued to watch them as they stepped to the door. He didn't know what they wanted, and he didn't care for that matter. His bank had been wiped out by the robbery. At this particular point, there was not much he could do for any potential customers. From the rough appearance of the two men, it occurred to him that they might even be thinking robbery. And if they were, they were going to be sadly disappointed. The thought almost caused a bitter smile to play upon his lips. He finally rose from his chair and went to the front of the cage.
Can I help you, gentlemen?
I'm U.S. Deputy Marshal Buck Avery, and this here is Deputy Casey Dixon. We're here to see what we can do about the folks that robbed your bank, Mr.
Lassiter. Please, come back.
He walked over to the cage door to meet him. He had never met any of the deputies out of Fort Smith, but he had heard of Buck Avery. Everybody in the territory had.
Mr. Lassiter, we're hoping to catch up with the men who did this and maybe get some of your money back. What can you tell us about what happened?
Well, there were four of them. Three came into the bank, and the other one held the horses outside. The one that seemed to be the boss was an older man. The others were all young men. Horace Ramsey, he's the blacksmith. He says he thinks it was Roy Blanton and his sons, the same bunch that robbed the train down at Durant. I wouldn't know one way or the other, but one of the robbers called the old man Pa. Anyway, they shot Jason Burke, one of my tellers. Been with me ever since I first opened the bank. Shot him down for no reason at all. He was just trying to get out of the way. They cleaned out my safe, and then they stood around in here and waited for Sam Sixkiller to come in the door. They didn't even try to get away when they could have. I think they had in mind to kill him all along. They shot him down when he walked in. Then they left. That's about all I can tell you.
Well, I'm right sorry to hear about Sam and your teller. We'll sure do our best to catch up with him. Much obliged for your help.
Casey, waiting for Buck to continue questioning the banker, was somewhat surprised when the old deputy turned to leave.
Which way did they go after they burnt Sam Sixkiller's shack?
Horace said they took the south road out of town. I couldn't say. They left me tied up behind the cage. Some of the men talked about forming a posse, but there weren't enough volunteers, so nothing ever came of it.
Headed south, huh? That's what I thought. They might be halfway back to Texas by now.
Maybe, but they might not be in a hurry to get back. According to what Mr. Lassiter said, they don't seem to think there's any reason to hurry. They might be planning to do a little celebrating first. If we can pick up their trail, they might not be that far ahead of us.
You might be right, partner. It's going to be tough to track them, though. Their tracks are already a couple days old, and picking them out of a bunch of other tracks in the road ain't going to be easy.
You're right about that. Let's go talk to that blacksmith. If he saw which way they left, he might be able to help us figure out which tracks are theirs.
Horace Ramsey walked out of a shed to meet the two men approaching on horseback.
Marshals.
Casey and Buck stepped down.
That's right.
I thought so. I saw yous over at the bank talking to Walter. Figured you was sent out here about the bank robbery.
I'm U.S. Deputy Marshal Buck Avery. And this is Deputy Casey Dixon. Mr. Lassiter over at the bank said you saw the gang leaving town.
That's fact. Went right by my forge. Headed for the trail to Boggy Creek.
What's out that way? And where's it go?
Boggy Creek.
Is that all? Ain't no settlement or nothing?
Nothing. Unless you want to count the crossing, which ain't no more than a trading post.
Yeah, I know the place.
Buck turned to Casey.
More saloon than anything else. It's about half a day's ride from here. A fella named Blackie Andrews owns it. Got a little trading post attached to it. It used to be run by a Mexican named Garcia. Half his customers are outlaws on the run.
That's the place, all right. Last I heard, Mexicans still take care of the trading post. But it's a saloon that carries the load.
Sounds like a place we ought to be checking out.
Now, I ought to tell you, the crossing ain't right on the trail. You have to turn off an old engine game trail before you get to the fork, where Muddy Boggy joins Clear Boggy. It ain't easy to find if you ain't ever been there before.
Much obliged. I've been to Blackie's place, but I ain't never gone there from this side of it.
He turned back to Casey again.
You might want to let the smithy here take a look at the hoof on that gray. It wouldn't do to let him go lame on us.
I suppose you're right.
At Casey's direction, Horace walked over and lifted the gray's left front hoof. It didn't take him long to spot the problem.
Hell, I can see right off what's wrong. Has it been walking kind of ginger on it?
Yep.
Whoever put his shoes on didn't get them on straight. At least he didn't get this one on straight. So one of the nails is cutting into the sensitive part of his hoof. He's feeling it every time he puts his weight on it.
Well, we're in a hurry. Can you fix it?
Maybe we ought to not be in too big a hurry. Afternoon's already getting along on us. We start out now, we'll likely get to the crossing in the middle of the night sometime. And that's providing we can find a cutoff trail in the dark.
I reckon you're right. Can you fix him up, Horace?
Sure. I got time to shoe all 4 feet if you're going to be staying overnight. Or if you just want that one fixed, I can use the same shoe. Just take it off and straighten it.
And just fix the one. We can at least ride till dark.
Damn, partner. You sure are in an all-fired hurry. It ain't gonna amount to more than an hour or so head start on that trail. It ain't worth it when we could stay in a hotel here and have us a drink or two tonight. We can get an early start in the morning.
All right, we'll start out first thing in the morning.
The two deputies walked out of the dining room together.
Now that was a fine supper. All I need now is a couple of drinks of whiskey. What'd you say, partner?
You go ahead. I want to go see about my horse. I'll catch up with you at the saloon.
Buck headed toward the saloon while Casey returned to the blacksmith shop.
How's it coming, Horace?
I figured you wouldn't be needing him till morning.
Well, I'd like to take him over to the stable with the other two horses.
How's this horse ride? You pretty satisfied with him?
I tell you the truth, he ain't my regular horse. He's going back to the corral when we get back to Fort Smith.
You have trouble holding him at a steady gait? Does he want to trot a lot?
As a matter of fact, he does. But I figured he's just lazy. Trotting's easier.
Horace stroked his chin thoughtfully.
Might be, but I was looking him over while you was at supper. I ain't sure the last feller that shoot him knew his business. If it was my horse, I'd fit him to lower his hind feet angles. The shoes he's wearing has got him too high. That'll make a horse tend to trot instead of gaiting.
And you can fix that, right?
Yeah, I sure can.
Mister, you're a slick salesman. Go ahead and do it. But I'll play hell trying to get my money back from John Council.
Yes, sir. And if you pay me now, I'll take him over to the stable for you tonight.
Casey got to the saloon later than had been planned, but it was obvious by the state of intoxication that Buck had already accomplished that his partner had not waited for him.
It's to you.
I know, damn it. Still thinking.
At a back table, there was a six-hand poker game in progress, and Buck was in the middle of it. Casey walked to the bar.
Beer.
You one of the marshals in town?
Casey looked at the bartender. He was a thin, bald man with a handlebar mustache.
Yep.
Your friend there is doing all right. I swear it looks like he's winning every other hand. Maybe it'd be a good idea to let you know that a couple of those boys don't take kindly to losing. They're cowhands from the Lucky K Ranch, about 5 miles north of here. And they can get a little ornery when they're liquored up good. Now, last month, Roach, he's the big one wearing the rebel cap, damn near carved up some feller from McAllister with a bowie knife. I sent for Sam Sixkiller, and he rode him and his friends clear out of town.
He glanced over at the table for a second.
It didn't take long for word to get around that Sam is dead.
I expect Buck will keep things under control.
Well, I hope so. Last time cost me a couple of chairs and a cracked tabletop.
Casey took his beer and walked over to watch the card game.
You want in, partner?
Nope. Looks like you're doing pretty good. I might change your luck.
Seems to me he's too damn lucky.
It was Roach, the cowhand wearing the rebel cap, who spoke.
Luckier than he ought to be.
That's right, boys. Lady Luck always rides with the pure of heart.
He threw his hand in.
I'm gonna let you boys have this hand.
It's about time. I'll call.
Casey watched a few more hands before becoming bored with it and going back to the bar for another beer. By that time, Buck's luck seemed to have returned. Casey was inclined to turn in for the night, but judging by the sour expressions on the faces around the table and the free-flowing whiskey, he thought it best to stick around for a while to make sure Buck got up to bed all right. He didn't have to wait long before the inevitable happened.
Call.
Aces and tens, boys.
Roach and one other player who had remained in the call threw their cards in, disgusted.
God damn it!
One of the other cowhands, equally disgusted, got up and went to the bar for another full bottle of whiskey. But Roach had reached his boiling point.
That last ace come off the bottom of the deck.
He looked Buck straight in the eye.
That's right. I saw it.
I'm disappointing you, boys. Here we was having a nice friendly game. You have to go say something like that.
Buck looked around at the glaring eyes centered on him.
Yeah, I'm just gonna forget you said that. We'll get on with the game.
You ain't too bright, are you? We don't tolerate card slicks around here. If you want to walk out of here on your own 2 feet, you can leave the money on the table and get up out of that chair and head for the door.
He threw a large skinning knife and it stuck in the table before him. Casey watched the developing storm with more than a little interest, remembering the card game at the Deuce of Spades when Buck sat it out and let him handle the trouble. He decided to wait to see if Buck could take care of his problem by himself.
Well, now I reckon it's getting around to be my bedtime. And it looks like this game's over, don't it? I'm sorry you fellas turned out to be sore losers, but I won the money, and I'll be taking it with me.
The hell you are!
Roach jerked his knife up and stabbed an ace of diamonds perilously close to Buck's hand. Chair shot back from the table, and all eyes were on Buck.
Are you sure you want to threaten a U.S. deputy marshal with that knife?
I don't give a damn if you're a marshal. A cheat's a cheat, and you got a lesson coming.
How about a marshal with a .44 aimed at you under the table?
A mild expression of shock registered on Roach's face. He looked for a moment as if undecided what to do. Then, inexplicably, a smirk slowly spread across his face, causing Buck to wonder. With no eyes in the back of his head, he couldn't see Roach's friend poised over him with a bottle of whiskey raised to strike. What happened next was almost over before the poker players knew what had taken place. Casey shot forward. With his left hand, Casey tracked the wrist of Buck's would-be assailant, stopping the bottle while it was still over the cowhand's head. With his right, he jabbed the barrel of his pistol hard into the man's side.
All right, this little party is over. Buck, you still got your friend there covered?
I will have.
Buck pushed back his chair to give him room to draw the weapons from his holster.
God damn.
Bluffing's just a part of playing poker.
You fellas!
Casey indicated the two players who were obviously not with the cowhands.
Get on out of here!
Next, he signaled the three ranch hands.
You three are under arrest. Get your hands palm down on that table. Buck, take their guns.
While Buck was relieving the three disgruntled ranch hands of their sidearms, the bartender moved up beside Casey.
Psst. There ain't no jail. The Blantons burnt it down.
Casey paused to consider that for a moment. He could turn them loose, but he didn't want to worry about getting jumped by them later on if they decided to try to get their money back from Buck.
What time do you open up in the morning?
Usually about 9:30, 10 o'clock.
You got a storeroom someplace where we can lock them up overnight?
You can't lock these three up in my storeroom. They tear that room apart.
All right, I'll take them to jail. You ready, Buck?
Yeah.
We're taking you boys to jail for the night. You can get your firearms from the bartender here when he opens up in the morning.
He gave the bartender a glance and a nod to make sure he understood.
Let's go. Start walking.
He prodded the man in the back who had held the bottle. Buck herded the other two behind him. Once in the street, they had to walk their prisoners about 50 yards down to the ruins of the police station.
Buck, you think we ought to shoot them in the legs like we usually do, so they can't try to run?
Yeah, I reckon.
Now hold on, dammit. We ain't gonna run.
What do you think, Buck?
I reckon they learned their lesson. But if this one runs, I'm shooting to kill. That son of a bitch accused me of cheating.
All right, then.
Casey took a coil of rope from one of the prisoners' horses. Leaving the horses tied to the hitching post, they escorted the cowhands down the street.
Hey, wait a damn minute!
One of the prisoners saw the pile of blackened timbers that was all that remained of the police station.
Hey, wait a damn minute! You can't leave us tied up here! We got cattle to work in the morning!
Yeah, we'll get fired if we don't show up in the morning.
I expect you should have thought about that before you decided to carve up an officer of the law.
Finding one long section of iron bars that had been the front of two cells, Buck tied Roach and one other hand and foot to the heavy metal. The third member of the party was tied to a large, partially burnt heavy timber that had served as the building's ridge pole.
You boys are lucky it's a warm night. You can stay here and think about your evil ways, and remember that crime don't pay.
Buck and Casey turned and started walking away.
About a little drink before we go to bed. I can afford to buy.
I expect you've already had enough to kill an ordinary man. Me, I'm going to bed. We got a long ride in the morning.
It was one sad and sick deputy marshal who was awakened before daybreak the next morning.
Come on, get up, Buck.
Casey lightly shook his partner by the shoulder.
You gotta get going. Roy Blanton ain't likely to wait around for us to come get him.
Who?
Blanton.
Oh, yeah. I'm up.
Good. You get yourself together while I go over to the stable and get the horses.
Casey left the old deputy to try to shake off the prior night's drunk, half expecting him to be passed out again when he returned. Still, it was not close to daylight when he returned to the hotel to find Buck out front waiting for him.
Well, I see you made it.
Oh, hell yeah. It's a working day. I'm ready to go.
Buck made a sour face when he evidently tasted a bit of last night's celebration coming back to say good morning.
I wish the hell kitchen was open, though. I sure could use some coffee.
Yeah, me too. But we don't have time to wait around for a couple hours for the kitchen to open. We'll stop after a few miles and make some coffee. We're going to need daylight anyway to find that cutoff trail.
In the saddle, they started toward the south end of the street. When they reached Sam Six Killer's burnt out shack, Casey pulled up and dismounted, leaving Buck in the saddle. Stiff, chilled, and sick, his three prisoners said nothing when they saw the deputy approaching in the dark.
I'm gonna turn you loose now. You got a choice. You can get on your horses and make it back to save your jobs, or you can wait till the saloon opens to get your guns.
Just turn us loose.
All right, I'll untie your hands, and you can untie your friends.
Back in the saddle, he wheeled gray and started out for the crossing. He set a brisk pace for the better part of 2 hours, following a trail barely discernible until the sun rose over the hills to the east, It was a silent ride. Casey knew Buck felt like hell, but he would burst before admitting it. They drove on until coming to a good spot to rest the horse. By this time, Casey was as desperate for a cup of coffee as Buck probably was, so he didn't waste any time getting a small fire started. The fire felt good in the chilly morning air, even though the first rays of the morning sun promised another hot July afternoon. Soon they were drinking coffee and finally felt like talking.
What a night. Tell you, partner, I can't do it like I used to when I was your age.
At least you had a good run of the cards. You did all right. That feller wearing the Confederate Army cap was sure you were dealing off the bottom.
Hell, I was. I'm surprised he's sober enough to see it, though.
Roy Blanton sat on a bench on the porch of Blackie Andrews' Lucky Dollar Saloon, taking in the afternoon sun. He took off his hat to reveal a thick shock of dirty gray hair that still held the shape of the hat molded into the heavy strands. There was a bottle of rye whiskey beside him and a glass half full in his hand. The bank job in Ataka had been more profitable than he had anticipated, and since they'd been disappointed in the take from the train robbery in Durant, he figured his sons deserved a little time to celebrate before moving on. But now he was getting itchy to leave. Blackie would no doubt be sorry to see him go. He was making a good profit from their two-day stay, both in his saloon and the trading post attached. He downed the whiskey in the glass and methodically filled it again, his thoughts drawn to his sons, who had disappeared into the trading post, no doubt to bargain with Garcia. He'd done well by his boys. Life had been good, hard at times, but good for the most part. He had taught them that everything was there for the taking, and it belonged to those strong enough to take it. One day, in the not-too-distant future, he could see that the time would come when he was not up to living in the saddle. He had been thinking about that lately, and he couldn't deny a certain feeling of melancholy that came with it. But he felt confident that his boys would take care of him when he got too old to ride. Junior, especially, would see that his pa was provided for. And he expected that he, being the eldest, would see that his brothers didn't forget how much they owed him. Of his three living sons, Junior was naturally his obvious successor to inherit the mantle as head of the family. Buster, fearless and sometimes reckless, was slow in the head, a condition that Roy believed may have come from a kick in the head by a horse when the boy was 12 years old. He needed someone to tell him what to do. Then he'd do his best to please. Zeke, he was the one most likely to want to split off from the family and go his own way. He was wild as Billy had been. The two of them would often compete to see who could do the most outrageous stunts or take the biggest chances. They were all good boys. He was proud of them. Their mother may not be especially proud of the path of life the boys followed, however, and he was aware of that, even though she never expressed her disappointment that her sons had all chosen to follow their father's lawless style. She knew better than to speak out against it. Her favorite had been Billy, the baby, and he had to smile when he thought about it. Billy had turned out to be the wildest of the bunch.
More like his old man.
How can you suggest such a thing? You dishonor her.
Oh, calm the hell down and think it over.
His reverie was interrupted by the sounds of an argument just inside the door of the trading post. Only mildly interested, since the boys were always arguing about something, he turned a casual attention to the matter. He was trying to decide whether it was worth the bother to get up from his seat to find out what the fuss was about, when Blackie's Mexican store clerk shoved Zeke out the door and followed after him into the packed clay yard of the store.
Hey!
Now they stood nose to nose. Junior and Buster came out, and Junior ran over to the porch.
It ain't nothing, Pa. Zeke just offered old Garcia $10 for a go with his wife, and the Mexican didn't like it too much.
Apologize to my wife, worthless beak.
I didn't insult her. $10 is a lot of damn money. What the hell's wrong with you?
Damn. That woman's old enough to be Zeke's mother.
My wife is no whore to lie with the likes of trash like you. Maria is a saint.
You know Zeke. It don't matter much to him. Young or old, pretty or ugly, skinny or fat. He says he's like Jesus Christ. He loves them all.
Watch your mouth, son.
Hell, it ain't me that said it. I'm just telling you what Zeke said.
Zeke suddenly pulled his gun and stuck it in Garcia's face.
You want a bullet in your head?
I wondered how long it was gonna be.
Roy put his hat on and stood up.
Zeke, put that damn gun away.
He stepped off the porch and walked over to the pair of antagonists. He grabbed Zeke by the shoulder and pulled him out of Garcia's face.
Damn it, boy. This is where we do business. If you got the itch for a woman that bad, go around behind the house and tend to yourself.
He directed his eyes at Garcia.
Juan! Why don't you go inside and forget all about this?
This man has insulted my wife. He spoke to her like a common prostitute and tried to lay his hands on her. He has insulted my honor as well when he offered me money to let him have his way with her.
I said to forget it! A man working for Blackie Andrews can't have much honor to give a shit about anyway. Now that's the end of it. Don't push your luck with me.
The dark, squinting eyes beneath the heavy, lowered brow promised Garcia that there would be hell to pay if the belligerent outlaw was pushed too far. Garcia, being a man of reasonable intellect, got the message. He was no longer dealing with a wild young scoundrel.
As you wish. We will forget the incident ever happened.
He turned and immediately went back inside. Junior and Buster beamed wide in their amusement until their father gave them a stern look of reproach.
Damn it. We do business here. Nobody but a damn fool shits where he sleeps.
Of the three sons, Zeke was the only one who saw no humor in the incident. It was not over as far as he was concerned. He glared back in anger at his brother's grins when their father turned to go back to his bench on the porch. Anna Garcia thought about the trouble that had taken place earlier in the store as she threw the supper dishwater out the kitchen door. It had been a terrifying moment when the young outlaw grabbed her by the arm. Still, she was ashamed to secretly admit that there was a wicked satisfaction in the thought that at age 41, she was attractive to a man of his young age. There was also a certain amount of gratification in the way Juan had responded to defend her honor. It had been some time since her husband had shown any excitement in regard to her. Glancing through the doorway to the other room of their living quarters, she saw Juan sitting before the fireplace, smoking his pipe, his belly full. She placed the dishpan down on the table, wiped her hands on her apron, and went out the kitchen door again to take the path to the outhouse. She stopped short when she saw the young Zeke Blanton leaning on one arm against the door frame.
Good evening, Ms. Garcia.
You want to use the outhouse?
No. I ain't got to use the outhouse. I just came to help you use it.
Before she could run away, Zeke quickly lunged at her and caught her by the arm.
Hey, what's your hurry? I saw how you was looking at me this afternoon in the store.
Please, my husband, your father, he said to leave me alone.
Come on, you know you want it. Hell, I'll still pay you, give you twice as much, $20. What do you say to that, huh? Me and you'll go around behind this outhouse and won't nobody know about it but us. No harm done.
What do you say?
Please, sir, let me go. I am a married woman. I don't do things like that.
You might as well make this easy, because it's damn sure gonna happen. Damn you! Oh, what did you make me do that for?
Zeke heard the sound of someone running from the back of the trading post.
You stay away from my wife!
Juan had grabbed a shotgun and run out the kitchen door.
I don't think so.
Juan went down from the three slugs in his chest.
Oh, no!
Shut up!
It was only a matter of seconds before everyone rushed to the scene of the murder, brought by the screams and gunfire. The last to arrive was Roy Blanton. With eyes blazing sparks of anger, he took in the scene, scanning from Anna Garcia, bleeding and crying on the ground by her dead husband, to Zeke standing by, stuffing his shirt tail in, a look of indifference displayed upon his face. The look on Blackie Andrews' face was one of utter disbelief as he stared down at his late employee. Junior and Buster stood to one side, watching Blackie, in case he felt the urge to retaliate for the murder of his store clerk. After taking it all in, Roy finally took action. Walking up to Zeke, he struck him hard across the face with the back of his hand.
I told you, we do business with these people.
Zeke staggered backwards a few steps and automatically reached for his pistol.
You pull that goddamn gun and I'll send you straight to hell right now.
Zeke quickly removed his hand from the gun handle.
I'm sorry, Pa. It was my fault. She's been shining up to me all day, and when she cornered me back here, well, hell, I wasn't going to turn it down. And then that crazy Mexican come running at me with a shotgun, and I didn't have no choice.
He looked from his father to his brothers, searching for understanding. His brothers, knowing him all too well, simply grinned in response. His father was still in the process of making up his mind. It was an unlikely story, but it made it a lot easier to deal with if what Zeke said was true.
You boys get the horses saddled. Get ready to ride.
Oh, hell, Pa. It's most about dark.
Do what I tell you!
Roy waited for him to leave for the corral before addressing Blackie, who had held his tongue out of fear for his safety.
Looks like you lost your man. I'm sorry about that. But he ain't the first man shot because of a loose woman. I'm sorry it had to happen, though. I reckon it won't be hard to find another clerk for your store. I'll leave you $100 to help you out while you're looking for another one.
Blackie continued looking down at the devastated widow. He knew Anna well enough to doubt Zeke's version of the story, but he was helpless to do anything about it. Juan Garcia was a good man. He was going to be hard to replace. But Blackie was afraid to attempt retaliation for his death or his wife's honor. Finally, he spoke.
May!
Blackie turned his head toward the saloon.
May!
Blackie's Choctaw wife appeared at the corner a few seconds later, a lantern in her hands.
Come get Anna and take her back inside.
The two men stood watching in silence as Blackie's wife hurried over to Anna's side and helped the woman to her feet.
Juan was a good man. It's a sad thing when you lose a good man.
Roy was confident now that Blackie harbored no thoughts of revenge.
Well, I expect me and my boys will be getting along.
He turned and walked away, leaving Blackie to take care of the body. In the corral on the other side of the saloon, the Blanton boys were saddling the horses and preparing to break camp.
Oh, yes, sir. Old Zeke sure has got away with the women.
Don't he, though? She just wouldn't leave him alone, would she? Following him around like a dog in heat.
You know, Zeke, she's a widow woman now. You and her might want to get married since she's so sweet on you.
You go to hell, both of you.
I'd sure rather stay here tonight instead of moving on.
What difference does it make? Camp here, camp down the road a piece, it's all the same.
This camp is closer to the whiskey. and Zeke's gal.
Shut your damn mouth or I'm gonna shut it for you.
Uh-oh, you gonna rile him in a minute.
Shit, he's all talk. Just like when he was telling Pa how that woman chased after him.
Zeke charged into Buster, flailing his fists left and right.
Whoa.
Caught by surprise, Buster backed away, trying to ward off his brother's onslaught. When one of Zeke's wild punches landed on Buster's mouth, splitting his lip, it was not funny anymore. Wading into Zeke, swinging punches as fast as he could throw them, he halted his brother's advance. At a standoff then, they stood toe to toe, swapping punches, much to Junior's entertainment. They kept at it, with no one gaining the advantage, until a cyclone of wrath in the form of Roy Blanton suddenly descended upon him.
God damn it!
Raising welts with each blow of his quirt, Roy flogged his two sons relentlessly until they both cowered at his feet, trying to cover their heads to avoid the stinging leather across their backs.
Finish packing up them horses like I told you.
He shifted a menacing glare to focus on Junior.
I'm near about ready, Pa.
Junior backed away just in case his father had a mind to giving him a taste of the quirt. As Zeke and Buster limped off like two whipped dogs, Roy turned to his elder.
I'll try to raise you boys proper. And that means no fighting brother again brother. You should have stopped him, you being the oldest.
Yes, sir. I know that now. I should have stopped him. Next time I will.
Oh, there better not be no next time. Now, damn it, I aim to get going, and I mean right now.
Yes, sir. But why are we in such a hurry to get away from here? Why don't we just head out in the morning?
I don't know Blackie Andrews that good. He ain't said much about Zeke shooting that Mexican, but he might just have a burr up his ass about it. Him and that Injun woman that lives with him. I don't trust him when my back's turned. And with us camped right up beside the corral, there's too many ways to sneak up on us. It'll be best to ride away from this place and camp where we can see who's coming and going.
Why don't we just shoot the lot of them?
We may need Blackie sometime again. There's a lot of outlaws hiding out in the nations, and a lot of them are Blackie's friends. You never know who might be looking to shoot you in the back.